Welcome to the show. Colin Cowherd is off today. Coming up, I'll tell you why I love Tiger Woods' response to questions about Donald Trump. All right, welcome back. Mark Schlereth and TJ Houshmandzadeh are back. We're joined now by the founder of the Big Lead, Jason McIntyre. Let's move to Tiger Woods, who finished in the middle of the pack at the Northern Trust this weekend after a rough weekend with some surprisingly bad putting. But an even bigger surprise came at the press conference after the final round when a reporter decided to press Tiger on his relationship with President Trump.
Well, I've known Donald for a number of years. You know, we've played the golf together, and you know, we've had dinners together. And so, yeah, that's I've known him, you know, pre-presidency and obviously during his presidency.
At a time, especially 2018, I think a lot of people, especially people of color, immigrants, feel threatened by him, by his policies. He's thrown himself into sports debates in terms of race with LeBron James, with the anthem. What do you say to people who might find it interesting that you have, I guess, a friendly relationship with him?
Well, he's the president of the United States, and you have to respect the office. And no matter who's in the office, you may like, dislike personality or the politics, but we all must respect the office.
All right, to nobody's surprise, the president jumped into the debate this morning, tweeting, "The fake news media worked hard to get Tiger Woods to say something that he didn't want to say. Tiger wouldn't play the game. He is very smart. More importantly, he is playing great golf again," which I'm sure President Trump is taking credit for. Listen, Tiger did a masterful job here. He finishes up playing 72 holes of golf. This is not the time to ask the guy about presidential politics. I think this is a reporter for the New York Times. I get it. I miss the days because I'm a non-political person. I've spent my entire life pretty much divorced from politics. I don't like to talk about it really too much. I don't state very many opinions about politics. I've never voted. And I know that annoys my family and a lot of people. But I don't like to be involved with politics because I'm not that big of an expert on it. And certainly these athletes aren't. And everybody ran around and was best friends with Donald Trump for three decades. And then he got elected president. And oh my God, if you're friends with Donald Trump, and I'm talking about black people, rappers rapped about him. Everybody loved Donald Trump. Everybody, black, white, whomever. He becomes president, now everybody's got to hate him. I tip my hat to Tiger for being prepared for it or not being knocked off his feet by it and staying out of the controversy. I think it was a smart move by Tiger.
This feels like the best performance by an athlete in front of the media since Tom Brady said, "My wife told me to stay out of politics." You know, that was a great answer by Tom Brady, and this was great by Tiger Woods. The sad part of journalism, guys, it feels like gotcha, doesn't it? I mean, the New York Times sending Tiger, sending to interview Tiger at this tournament. Tiger didn't get asked about Trump at any of the majors that I'm aware of. He was in play in all the majors. But now it's like, well, he's out of the mix. He's not going to win. Let's ask him about it. Let's get in that presidential question. It's kind of disappointing, right? I mean, because the websites were all ready to, it's like a feeding frenzy when somebody says something or speaks out of pocket. And it's just kind of disappointing where this stuff's headed for sports.
He is articulate. Obviously, Tiger Woods is very intelligent, articulate, articulated his point. You do have to have respect for the presidency. Even if you don't like the president, the office of president is something you should have respect for in this country. Fortunately, many don't. But that's just the way it was, regardless of who's in office. The same can be said when Obama was in office. There's a lot that didn't have respect for that. So I would say that. Tiger did a masterful job, you know, but I always look at this like it's always interesting that we want to ask our athletes about their political views completely out of context in a situation that doesn't really fit. And I always look at it like, you know, a kid works his butt off, comes from nothing to become a great football player. And all of a sudden he gets drafted in the first round and he gets $20 million dumped on him. And then we expect him as society to be a certified financial planner. Like, what do you mean you blew your money? Like, how could you do that? If somebody gave me that much money, I would I wouldn't spend a dime. And, you know, and it blows me away. Like, all you've ever done is work to be a great football player. I don't expect you to be a financial planner.
Or a politician.
Right.
Political commentator.
It's when you hear Tiger say, "Oh, I've played golf with Donald." When he refers to him as Donald, what do you think he's going to say? He's not going to say anything negative about him. The problem is, like you said, rappers would refer to him in their songs. It was, you know, Donald Trump was looked at as he's this rich guy, he has all this money, but nobody knew his views and how he thought of people of color. And so now that they know that, that's why he gets all this negative backlash, because nobody knew his views on and how he acted and how they feel he's treating the black race or the African-American community. Tiger's always been politically correct. What did you expect him to say? It doesn't surprise me, but the way we're social media, everybody wants the black athlete to say something negative about Donald Trump because, oh, he's against Colin Kaepernick. And that's what it's all started, and it's just it's never going to end.
I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but I just want to put this into the I'm not sure what Donald Trump's views are on African Americans. I know he wants to build a wall, and that has irritated a lot of Latino Americans. I'm not sure the record is clear on where Donald Trump stands. I don't know if he's any different than Bill Clinton or any of the other presidents we've had. Right. I think the media has whipped everyone into a frenzy. If you don't hate Donald Trump, you're either a racist or a sellout. And people like Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods is getting vilified a little bit here over social media, and some people in the media. He needs to take a stance. But it's like there's no room for Tiger Woods just to be the guy he was raised to be. His dad was in the military. Yeah. Tiger Woods has lived a pretty great life. To ask Tiger Woods to now know how people that he never grew up with, haven't been friends with, for him to have feelings for them, strong, passionate feelings that he wants to put out there on the record, I think is somewhat unfair to Tiger Woods.
I'm like you. I'm not a big political person, yeah. But it's just funny. The other day, I want to say, it was yesterday or Saturday, I got a daughter that's 6 and a son that's 4. My daughter says, why don't people like Donald Trump? And I don't know what to say to that.
Yeah.
Because there's so many different reasons. She's 6, and she asked that question, and my son is sitting there like, he's listening. Because he came up on the TV screen.
We banned it in our house, TJ, because the kids at school talk about it. My kids came
all
and said,
the time.
We're not talking about that. But does this not feel kind of like Michael Jordan's Republicans Buy Shoes 2 moment? I mean, Tiger just sidestepped everything, just like Michael Jordan did. Now, it was easy with no social media in the 80s or early 90s to just punt on all politics. It's a lot tougher now. Like you said, people on social media are attacking Tiger.
I want to end on this note. TJ, the next time, if your kids are watching, the next time they ask you that question, give them a very serious answer. Seriously. Donald Trump puts out a lot of negative energy. I mean, through his Twitter, he attacks everybody. That's why he's not liked. He puts out negative energy, and people give negative energy back to him. To Jacksonville, where Jags receiver Marquise Lee is out for the year after suffering a knee injury on a low hit during a game against the Falcons on Saturday. The hit was illegal and drew a flag, but that didn't stop Jalen Ramsey from blaming the NFL's new helmet rule for his teammate's injury.
Can't be mad at 2-7. Kind of got to be mad at the NFL, I guess. Not mad at them, but I mean, it's just how the rule is. Mm-hmm. Like, people are scared to tackle normal, I guess, just because they think they're going to get helmet to helmet or they think they're going to get flagged. And now it's not even flagged. It's also, you know, potentially getting thrown out the game. And that's game-changing stuff to happen. So you don't really want to blame him. You know he felt bad for it.
Listen, I agree with Jalen Ramsey. I think he's talking about the helmet rule, but he's also just talking about the rules in general over the last few years. You're begging defensive backs to hit people in the knees and not hit them in the chest area or anywhere where you can get flagged. And this is the consequence of it. You're going to have more and more hits like this and more knee injuries, and guys are going to have their careers cut short rather than getting a concussion and maybe having their life cut short, if you believe all the science. I think Jalen Ramsey's right here. This is an outgrowth, a byproduct of the helmet rule and all the other rules they put up against the defense.
We used to have a gentleman's agreement when we played. If I played defensive back, he played wide receiver. If I had a chance to hit him, I'm always going to hit him up high. I'm not going to hit him in his money makers. I'm not going to hit him in his legs. I'm going to take him down. Now you've made it where I can't even do that because now I'm giving up money. I'm potentially being ejected because I can't hit him high. It's a penalty. So I have no choice. My only course of action is to take him out low. We saw it years ago when T.J. Ward hit Rob Gronkowski because they started changing the emphasis on the targeting rule. It is harder for defensive backs more than ever to make solid hits on players. You don't have much surface area, so now the only thing that you can do is chop guys down in the league. It's unfortunate, but that's now how guys have to play in the back end.
He's 100% correct. I'm a receiver. If I'm a receiver in today's game, I go before every game. I go to the safeties. Listen, bro, hit me up high. If you get fined, I'll pay the fine. I would prefer to get hit high than low, and I played the game. I don't want to be hitting my knees at all. I don't want that. You can't. He catches the ball as soon as he turns, bam. He can't protect himself. He can't jump. He's kind of curling up because he knows he's about to get hit. You're not used to getting hit low by safeties. We don't get hit low because they're trying to blow us up. But now it's what you said. Guys are concerned about the 15-yard penalty and that fine. Man, they need to go to these DBs and say, bro, hit me up high. I'll pay the fine if you get fined. Because I don't want to lose my lose a season by tearing my ACL. It's very own. He just signed a deal.
Hey, listen, I started working out again just simply because the way the league is going right now, eventually it's going to be a no-contact sport, and I'm going to make more money signing a one-year deal than I did 12 years playing. I mean, if we just take contact out of a contact game, I'm 100% on board with you. This rule, the unintended consequences of the way they're calling rules right now are going to be continued knee injuries and leg injuries, and that's 100%. We all feel the same way, even on, like, peel-back blocks. Back in the day when that was legal, we had it with a D lineman. Listen, if I get a peel back block, I'm going to hit you right in the chin.
Right.
If they didn't want you hit you in the legs, you're going to hit you right in the chin. You're going to see it coming. That's the way it was on interceptions. Same thing. Man, I can't tell you how many times I've been knocked ass over tea kettle. You know, got it right here. I mean, and that's fine. That's the way the game has been played for a long time. I understand the safety aspects of what they're doing. But if you want to change, this is what irritates me. Can we get together as a players association and a league and actually discuss what you want as opposed to letting the competition committee just say, hey, here's the new rule, we're dictating it? That's the wrong approach. We keep talking about changing the culture of the National Football League. Why is it 100% on the players? Why?
They're changing the culture. It's just right. What? Well, but you're,
my point is this: is we're the ones. The players are the ones getting fined. The players are the ones that have to change the target. The players are the ones that have to do this. Meanwhile, everybody else just watches them get fined and go, wow, that's too. Like, what? Well, how
you're
come?
Making my point.
Well, how come Vontaze Burfict can continue to go out and play and Marvin Lewis not get fined for it? Like, how? Why don't, like, instead of taking a player's money, make him stand on the sideline if he does something egregious, make him stand on the sideline in street clothes and fully pay him. So the owner comes down and says, what are you coaching? Why, I don't want to pay a guy $1 million to stand on the sideline.
I got another suggestion.
Okay.
I have another suggestion. And we don't have time to go all off into it, but what you're talking about, Mark, is there's some other adjustments in the rules that can be made besides penalizing players. Why have I never heard it discussed? Hey, let's make it illegal for safeties to line up more than 10 yards off the ball. That'll slow down some of the collisions. Why aren't we allowing defensive backs to put their hands on the receivers further up the line so there's less separation, tackles are easier to make? It blows my mind that the NFL has never partnered with some mid-major college football league. My conference, let's say the Mid-American Conference. Partner with them, pay them some money to test out some of the rules adjustments that you'd like to implement in professional football and study them for a year or two in a Mid-American conference, some mid-major conference, and then adopt them to the NFL. I don't see any creativity, and that's what you're getting at. Their solution is just, let's just take money out of the players' pockets, let's just browbeat them and penalize them, and that'll fix the game rather than trying to creative
ways. What happens when Aaron Rodgers scrambles and somebody goes low and tears his knee out? Then you'll see.
It's different because quarterbacks are always protected.
Not when they get out the pocket.
DeAndre Hopkins, Antonio Brown, Odell Beckham Jr. You lose some of your superstars.
You're going to get a lot of receivers hurt.
Then it would be like.
Because, well, guys, yeah. You're going to get a lot of them.
Here's what will change things. The Giants just gave $95 million to Odell Beckham Jr. Let his knee get taken out this year, and they got to watch all that money
all
go
that
up
money
and smoke.
Go down the drain.
Then they'll change. All right, welcome back. Mark Schlereth, Bucky Brooks, and TJ Houshmandzadeh are back. Let's move to Lamar Jackson, who struggled so far this preseason, but just turned in the best performance of his NFL career. in a win over the Dolphins. He went 7 for 10 for 98 yards and a TD and added another touchdown on the ground. Afterward, Lamar sounded pretty relieved.
How much fun was it out there?
Absolutely fun. You know, I felt a lot comfortable, you know, coming into my fourth preseason game. I hope people know, you know, I can throw now. You know, even though I had a low percentage, but it's all good. You know, we had fun, came out with a win.
All right, I do think this is progress. I'm not going to hate on the man that this was progress, but I don't know if his ship has arrived. I still think they need to keep RG3. I don't think what we've seen from Lamar right now says that RG3 is expendable.
No, I think so. I think it's part of a bigger plan with RG3 being around. I think RG3 is going to be the backup in 2019. Lamar Jackson will be the starter. For years, we've heard teams with athletic quarterbacks say that if one guy gets hurt, we don't have a guy that's like him. We have to change our offense. In Baltimore, you have guys that have similar playing styles. They can go forward with Jackson and RG3 2019 and beyond.
What happens if Flacco plays well this year?
Then you change the plan, right?
Yeah. So it's for me, I'm like you. Lamar Jackson, you went 7 for 10. That's a good game. But if you play a full game, are you going to go 21 for 30? You just don't know. It was a good game, and I don't get too high or too low. I still think he's going to be a good player in the league. It's going to take time. I wouldn't even have made the comment, I hope people know I can throw now.
Right.
It's one game.
I would say I hope people think I can throw now. You completed 3 Texas routes to the running back. That was just a dump off of the right, little
slant,
inside, right?
Yeah.
Inside Texas.
Angle route.
Right, yes. Angle. And then you completed a couple shallow crosses, right? Mm-hmm. You had a one-on-one to the outside on an out route that you completed that was your only receiver in the route. So it's not like you have a complex route tree that you're throwing to and you're reading defenses. They designed it for you and good for them to make it easy, get you some easy completions, get you some confidence. That doesn't mean that you can orchestrate an offense yet. He showed progress, good for him. He's a dynamic athlete. He scrambled a couple times, made some plays. But before we say, hey, now that he's 7 for 10, we can put him in there, this is the regular season is a completely different angle.
All right, welcome back. Tony Gonzalez and James Harrison are back. We're joined now by the founder of the Big League, Jason McIntyre. Let's move to New York, where the Giants just made Odell Beckham Jr. the highest paid wide receiver in NFL history with a 5-year, $95 million contract extension. Today, Odell was asked if his record-setting payday comes with any extra pressure.
I don't know if it puts any extra that I haven't already put on myself. You know, coming in early in early in training camp and being able to be here and knowing where I'm at in life and knowing that I do need to be a leader and there are guys that are watching me and I need to be there to on days that I may not be doing that, at least be bringing energy somewhere else. So I don't know if it's any extra responsibility that I didn't already, you know, kind of put on myself going into this year, year 5, being a vet.
I think he's matured quite a bit, and I think that stuff hopefully is in the past, and I think he's ready to go on and be the type of player and citizen that we expect him to be, and I think he will be.
Love it. I love John Mara there. Hopefully that stuff's in the past. I think he's matured. This is a wing and a prayer. They're crossing their fingers. Odell Beckham Jr. is the Dennis Rodman of the NFL. And if Dennis Rodman had ever been one of the highest paid players in the NBA, Dennis Rodman would have been even more of a nightmare. I don't think this is going to bring out the best in OBJ. I don't think there's guys that play because they love the game, and there's guys that play because they love the money and the attention. Odell Beckham Jr. loves the money and attention. This contract, in my view, will be a mistake.
Yeah, well, obviously, we'll find out sooner or later, but I agree with you. Money doesn't make you any worse of a person or a better, it just makes you more of who you really are. And what we've seen of Odell over the past 4 years, he's got that emotional roller coaster. But one thing that happened to him last year with that injury, I think that kind of changes your perspective. Like, knowing that this game could be taken away from you at any second, I'm hoping, just like Mr. Marr said there, that he has learned some lessons now. And with that money, maybe he will start to change. People change now. You got to give him a chance. He is a young kid living in New York.
But not with $95 million in a pocket, they don't.
$95 million.
I feel like he's going to mature. Like you said, the injury, it really sat on him. And he realized that, you know what, this game is short.
And, you know, he needs to go in there and do everything that he needs to do to maximize the benefits of playing this game. And right now, I think this is a step for him that he was looking to get, and he's going to go out there. I think he's going to do everything he said he's going to do. He's going to be more of a leader, and he's going to prove them right.
All right, listen, I'm not saying you and him are best friends, because I don't know if y'all even know each other. But just when you look across, when you examine OBJ, does he?
I'm not looking at the past. I'm looking at what I want to get from him in the future. Right now,
do you think he loves the game the way you love the game?
Yeah.
Why?
Dude, you see him out there putting up the numbers. You don't go out there and just put up the numbers because you want to have the show. You got to put that time in the offseason to be able to go out there and do that. It's not guys out there that's putting in the time and the work. I know a lot of people, me and him have a lot of the same bodywork people. I mean, he's doing a lot of the things that he needs to do to make sure he accelerates his game year in and year out.
And Tony told me, you saw him up at UCLA, right? At some point, like, Odell Beckham's working his butt off. Let's give him some credit, okay? This guy's only 25 years old, and I know I've been negative about Odell for about a year now. He blocked me on social media. I went through that whole thing.
No, he didn't.
Hey, keeping it real. I'll be completely honest with you guys.
What world are we living in right now?
I will say this. I'm going to say this. His idol, he said it many times, LeBron James is his idol. You guys remember LeBron early in his career was dancing on the sidelines, had all these antics, and opponents really didn't like it, and they started to call him out. And LeBron changed his tune when he got to Miami, grew up a little bit, cut the dancing, started winning. I think Odell's close to that. I don't know if the Giants are going to be winning anything anytime soon, but this is a guy, I think, 25?
Yeah.
25 in New York City. It's time to be a leader. He's now a target, Whitlock. When he goes out in the streets, he's a target.
Just help me out here, and maybe I'm just an old fuddy-duddy, and I'm just yelling. It's the hair, man. I don't get it. I don't get the blonde hair.
I done got used to it. At first, I'm like, why are you? I'm like, you know, that's just Odell. That's the way these.
But it's
younger
helped him. He's
generation.
Now one of the most popular players in the league.
He's working.
You see kids doing that.
I
got the Odell.
No.
I do. I see kids doing it. And they look lost to me.
They look lost.
Anytime.
You're getting old, man.
Yes.
You're getting old.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, you're getting old.
Yeah. I think he's starting to show.
Because that is, everybody, it's all about the brand nowadays. You got to,
hair helps him get that Nike contract.
Yes,
okay?
You're going to get contracts, and you're even talking about it. The world, it's all social media now. And you see how sensitive he was. He got blocked.
Yeah. It hurt. It stung me, man.
You can't have that.
Come on.
It's a new dawn, new day. It's not how it was with us.
And look, I may get in trouble for this, but blonde hair on a brother, man, it just don't add up to me.
So blonde hair on a sister don't add up to you?
That's a different conversation.
You saying it can't go both ways?
I just don't understand it, man. Wow. I'm just my father wouldn't understand it. I don't understand it. I don't know anybody that understands.
He's secure enough in his manhood, his masculinity.
That's not about masculinity. I just don't understand. It's just too much for me. To me, when I look at the press conference, like he spent more time on his hair than worrying about football, and that's a guy to me that's more of a Kardashian. More of an entertainer than a great football player.
Hold on.
How can you say worrying about football? He's shown up. He didn't hold out like some of the other receivers did. He's shown up and put in the work.
To get the money. Now that he's got the money, let's see what Odell does. And I just don't think money doesn't bring out the best in people. It just exposes what we've already been seeing from the boat party to the proposing to the kicking net. To the drops in the playoffs. I see a guy that seized an opportunity, did his little highlight catch. He's a brand more than a football player. I give my money to great football players, not great brands. All right, to Dallas, where Jerry Jones is still doing his best to find ways to improve the NFL and his product. Yesterday, offering up a proposal to shrink the preseason to 2 games and expand the regular season to 18, which he says actually will benefit the guys on the field.
Probably physically better for players than it is to have the longer preseason, the longer practicing. Our studies show that we actually have a ramped up injury situation with players during preseason as opposed to the injury factor in the regular season. So all of this has a lot of discussions, been discussed a lot.
All right, listen, I actually like the idea. I got my own twist on it, though. I think you go to 18 games regular season, but you limit players. You can only play in 16 games. And so you play eight and there's a couple of weeks where you don't get to play, I might make the quarterbacks an exception to that rule and maybe the kickers. But everybody, play 18, but you only get to play 16. More money to be made for everybody. Jerry estimates maybe $1 billion more for the players. I think it's a good idea.
I don't think it's a good idea the way you set it up. I think it's a good idea, like you said, if it's going to generate $1 billion more a year for the players, right? If he's going to take that $1 billion to say it's going to generate for these players and cut it up between 32 teams and add it to the salary cap, I'm all for it. But if you're not going to do that, then I'm not for it.
Well, I think his argument is that the $1 billion would be.
You think he's going to give all that to the players?
No. I think that what he means is maybe it's going to generate $3 billion extra dollars. $1 billion of it will go to the players.
Which is awesome. I am 100% into that. But the issue that you get into is a guy like James or a guy like me, or there's a great free agent story going on in Denver where I live right now. Philip Lindsay didn't get invited to the combine. He's a little tiny running back out of Colorado, out of CU. He's lighting it up, man. Everything they ask him to do, he does it in spades. He's great. He's going to make the team, right? Like, if you don't get the opportunity to play and practice as a smaller school preseason guy, you don't ever get to fulfill that dream. So I'm into that. I'm like, I'd be okay with that if we're going to extend the rosters from, from 53 to 63, right?
Oh, no, you need more than that.
Right. No. I'm saying the rosters from 53 to 63 and extra practice squad guys.
Yes.
And then on top of that, like if I'm negotiating this deal as a players association, I also want you to bring back some developmental league so that we can take young players who don't get a practice, who need the work, and go back to NFL Europe. So if you're going to invest in this game, then invest in this game, and we'll give you the two extra games. But you're going to have to do this so we can develop players and we can get some guys an opportunity to play this game at a high level that aren't going to get the work otherwise.
Yeah, that's because the point.
So that's what I would like. If you're going to do it, I'd love to see it.
I think they are. I think there is a league right now. I think Bill Polian's part of it now. They've got a couple ex-coaches that have coached the NFL.
Is watching it, but they're not invested in it. Mm-hmm. They're like, okay, we'll see, and if it looks like what we want, then we'll partnership. They need a partnership. They need to have a league where they can develop not only players but coaches.
Yeah,
like that's something that needs to happen.
Well, I agree with you, and hopefully I think that's where they're moving with this league. Supposedly that's the rumor on the street is, but 18 games to me, even when I played, and I know you guys probably don't want to hear this, I said even if you pay me extra money, I don't think I'd want that extra money. I'd rather continue making what I make because those extra two games, I don't know how you guys felt at the end of a season, man, your body is just beat down. And I think putting two extra games on top of that with the injury, I just don't know. I think the product, the end goal, the players would suffer from that, for playing those extra two games. But they just need to shorten the preseason to two games. I mean, four
games. That's going to cost money if they shorten it. What do you think of my idea, 18 games, but Tony Gonzalez only gets to play in 16 of them?
That's where you're going to get the competitive spirit. These guys, we're not sitting out. I'm not going to sit out a game.
Baseball players sit out.
I know, but that's...
Yeah, but they're soft.
They're it's baseball like players.
It's so funny. He said that.
He said that. He can say that. Plus game.
Yeah, 162 games in baseball. Yeah. So, but if you extend the rosters and you extend the practice squad, then you can have a little bit of a rotation where you don't, like, you can save yourself a few plays a game here and there. Then that, I mean, I think... If you don't extend the rosters and you don't extend the practice squad and you don't have
the rosters, right, though, you can't say, you know, at the time when they were trying to get 18 games before, we're going to add, I think it was like 3 or 5 more people onto the rosters. That's not going to work. You need to have a true practice squad that is at least a base of, I would say, 15 to 18 players that are just your practice squad, so that they, you know, can be out there taking.
You need to do it legally, like what we did back in the day, where you would have guys that lived in the ceiling tiles of the facility and they'd rappel down and run out to the practice field in the same jersey of the starters. Like, you'd have, in the old days, man, we have a 53-man roster. We had 80 guys on that team, hidden corners and all over the place. Like, that's the way we used to do it back then.
LeBron James made a complete, utter fool of himself last night with his new HBO TV show, The Shop. A year ago, while guest hosting The Herd, I upset LeBron fans by analogizing the basketball star to Donald Trump. I explained how athletic privilege works just the same as wealth privilege. There's not a great deal of difference between LeBron James and Donald Trump when it comes to being an elite person and a privileged person. Last night, during the debut of The Shop, LeBron proved me prophetic with a profane, primitive, and privileged look inside his fantasy shop, which is best described as the Black Billionaire Barbershop. LeBron's shop is what Donald Trump must imagine a Black barbershop is like. Everyone is cursing and dropping the N-word, and there's a token white liberal soaking it all in, feeling like the coolest person in the room because Black people are comfortable being ignorant in front of him. Twitter absolutely loves seeing LeBron this ratchet and ghetto. But I can't just blame Twitter. Timothy Bella of the Washington Post wrote a fawning review of LeBron, Maverick Carter, John Stewart and company, channeling their inner Donald Trump. Here's what Twitter, the Washington Post, and even LeBron James all miss. The shop is fake news. My dad owned a barbershop in an all-Black community in Indianapolis. It was called the Knot Hole. When my dad went into the bar business, he took us to Leon's barbershop in the all-Black community right down the street from his bar. When I moved to Kansas City, I got my hair cut weekly at the Artisan Barbershop in an all-Black neighborhood. When I moved here to Los Angeles, I used to get my hair cut at an all-Black shop called Legends. In all my years of frequenting Black barbershops, I've never seen Black men sipping goblets of red wine. Lord is my witness, they were holding goblets filled with Cabernet. But that wasn't even the worst thing. I've never seen a token white dude, especially one who didn't grow up in the neighborhood, dominating and driving the conversation inside a Black barbershop. John Stewart from The Old Daily Show was the star of this show. Was Trevor Noah unavailable? Arsenio? What Black barbershop has no disagreement? LeBron retold his Brentwood spray paint story, and no one offered a hint of cynicism. Hey, man, how come you ain't moved? That's what would have happened in my barbershop. Look, I'm as verbally raw as they come, depending on the setting. But I've never experienced that level of profanity and ignorance inside a barbershop. There's always an old head who shuts it all down. 75 times someone cursed. 11 times someone dropped the N-word. Well, what barbershop is this? LeBron's shop was a collection of elite Black millionaires who are so far removed from reality that they think the Black barbershop is a minstrel show with a white choreographer. In the middle of this minstrel show, John Stewart had the audacity to compare LeBron James to Muhammad Ali. Are you kidding me? Ali stood on religious principle. LeBron James is standing on Twitter. I had very high aspirations for LeBron James, but he has been completely turned out by fame and pop culture. He's 34 years old and allegedly wants to be a social activist, an educator, and a role model. This is how you portray yourself? You start a TV show and you instantly become Black Trump? LeBron, you're lost, you're confused, you're hypocritical, you're fired. All right, joining me now in my own barbershop, Jason McIntyre from The Big Lead, TJ Houshmandzadeh, former NFL Pro Bowler, Dante Jones, former LeBron teammate, former NBA champion. Dante, I want to start with you. I've just shredded LeBron. I know you're friends with LeBron. I want to give you an opportunity to say whatever you want in response. I want this conversation to be good and healthy. What I saw last night blew my mind, and the reason why I'm hot about it is because my expectations for LeBron are just higher than this.
Okay, there's a lot of parts to dissect here, but one part I want to start you on is the barbershop is not the same universally. The Black man's barbershop is different, and we all go to a barbershop indicative of our social consciousness, of our relationships, of different things according to the person that we are. Mm-hmm. So I even checked in with my barbers this morning. I go to two barbershops on two different coasts, one in Inglewood, New Jersey, and one in Inglewood, California. Chuck Taylor in Inglewood, California, and Gentleman's Quarterly in Inglewood, New Jersey. And both were saying the same thing I was. They were refreshed by it because this is the barbershop today. The barbershop.
Goblets of wine.
The barbershop today.
Goblets of wine. Barbershop. The barbershop today. The barbershop today
is a group of gentlemen who is the black man's country club. You may have a drink. The conversation, the tone of a conversation, the words used are according to who's in the room. If a woman's in the room, a child's in the room.
There was a woman in the room and there was a white man in the room.
Let me finish. If a woman's in the room, oh, excuse me, ma'am. The woman might say, you know what? You got it. This is how I talk too. So you cater that conversation according to who's in the room. It was a bunch of men, and it was Candace Parker, who was refreshing because her perspective was dope as well. But they were having a genuine conversation. Cursing was there, but I'm desensitized to cursing because that's what goes on in a barbershop. I thought it was indicative of what the barbershops I go to. The ones I grew up in, they were like yours. But the ones that I choose to go to now are more of that social scene where men do have a drink at night. Men do may drink wine. Men may drink beer. But I've never
Show me the black barbershop with the white liberal sitting there driving the conversation.
We shouldn't be that sensitive to the white liberal in the room. I'm not saying it's a white liberal, but the white gentleman in the room, we shouldn't be that sensitive to it. It doesn't have to be all black men in that shop. Some people are not there to get a haircut. Some people are there to have the conversation. And the conversations they were having, they were refreshing because there's what we talk about. We talk about real estate. We talk about business. We talk about religion.
There was
we talk about disagreement, Dante. But we only disagree on topics like the Bulls versus the Warriors or Kobe versus LeBron.
Why it wasn't authentic.
But those weren't the conversations that were highlighted. I think those are the conversations probably coming down the line. But we don't always argue in the barbershop. We agree because we're all going through the same things. We're all minorities. We're all going through this. We agree on topics of sports,
Dante,
but we universally
Dante,
mostly
Dante,
agree. And
Dante.
I even checked in. I asked questions about this because I thought I was tripping.
I got it. But, Dante, I'm just going to say this. I've been black 51 years.
I've been back 37 years.
I get it. We do disagree on things.
But all
particularly when we're talking amongst ourselves. But we may get on Twitter and there may be groupthink. We may get on TV and there may be groupthink. But amongst us, there is disagreement, and that was inauthentic. I want to move on. I'm going to circle back to you. Someone else.
So for me, watching this, obviously, I haven't been in a barbershop, as you guys can tell. So my whole life, I've never been in a barbershop to get my hair cut.
Oh.
I just recently started taking my son. What I will say from watching this was the reason there was no disagreement, there was no conversation, there was no topic for them to disagree on.
Facts.
Number one. Number two, when you were going to the barbershop, it was a different day and age. So the conversations are going to be different because it's a different day and age. It's a social media era now. So the conversations are going to be more global. They're going to be different. Social injustice. Saying the N-word, that's how we talk. Like, honestly, that's how we talk. So I wasn't turned off by it because I talk the same way, whether it's right or wrong in other people's
TJ,
eyes.
I'm going to let you finish, but there's a lot of things that I do and you do that aren't meant for public consumption. A lot of things.
But if you want it to be a real show, then
I should whip out my laptop and hop on Pornhub because that's what men do as well.
I don't. I ain't never been on it.
Again, but men do. And a lot of people do. And so there's a lot of things that people do that we just don't do out in public. And again, if we're going to be... We got the basketball player who's been lighting up Trump. And, you know, he's not acting presidential, blah, blah. And then you come out and do this? I find it very hypocritical.
What was hypocritical? What did he do that really turned you off aside from the goblets of wine in the end? Like, I thought it was perfectly
on the
fine,
goblets,
personally.
Can I ask? What would have been a better drink of choice? Would it have been cool and real if they had broke out
40s? That's what they drink.
If they had been in 40s, would it have been better with water?
That would have been stereotypical. I mean,
Jason, you've also never been in a black barbershop.
I have been in black barbershops. I have. My brother goes
to
a black barbershop.
Have you seen goblets of
wine? I've never have, but this is a TV show, Whitlock.
I'm telling you,
this is a television show. This is an entertainment show. Now, let me add this. You keep looking for this debate to push back on LeBron. This was a conversation. He didn't want that. Now, Michael Bennett offered a little bit, right? He came back at Draymond Green a little bit on the N-word.
Oh, Draymond
Michael
Green
Bennett,
came back at him, but yeah.
Michael Bennett did not want to say the N-word, and there was a little pushback. But, again, I don't think LeBron was trying to make this a debate show. And as Dante said, hey, if it's a Kobe versus LeBron discussion, right, that's a barbershop debate. But this was just a freewheeling discussion, and I will say this.
Don't you think, as this goes on, there's going to be quite
there
a few
disagreements.
There was a disagreement on the cats. Somebody got corrected on the cats on the cats topic and the Hamilton topic of Broadway plays.
And let me just quickly get to John Stewart because you keep ripping John Stewart being in there. And I spoke to someone who's going to be on the barbershop show, LeBron show this season, and he said, "Listen, everybody's welcome in the barbershop. And when LeBron's putting together his crew, A bunch of guys who've never hosted a TV show before. Whitlock, you're telling me Jon Stewart, an all-time great TV host in the 2000s, isn't a good choice to go in there just to move the conversation? What's wrong with that?
No, because if you present it like we having this authentic black conversation and somehow there's the overseer there who's driving the entire conversation, no, I'm not with it.
So if you're would you go?
Because one, there would be some disagreement because people wouldn't just let ignorant stuff fall out of their mouth or things that, look, they sat on there and acted like Muhammad Ali sat in prison and he did not. He did not. There was all kinds of, they sat in there and Candace Parker throws out, oh, LeBron, I'm glad that you're telling your daughter she can achieve anything because that's not what young girls are told. And I'm like, what world are you living in? We live in a society where black women are raising kids on their own, and it's been statistically proven they've done a far better job with their daughters than black boys. It's statistically, they out-achieve black boys by an amazing gap. And we're sitting on there acting like the real problem is with black girls and they're not being pushed. And she's just wrong.
But I think that
was taken out of context. She's just saying what we're teaching our black daughters of what they can accomplish. That was refreshing to hear a man say it. To hear a man say that's how he's talking to his daughter. But I thought the conversations were authentic. And I think LeBron James was authentic in there because he's a role model. And as I'm raising boys right now, I want them to think about others. I want them to try and make the world a better place. I want them to
communicate.
I want them to be passionate. I want them to communicate in the best way, the best way possible. I want them to have a moral compass, and I also want them to dominate in basketball. You know what I'm saying? That's lastly, but I want them to be all the things that LeBron James is because he's the gold standard for a role model right now.
And not one person, when this Snoop Dogg, who's a rapper, and that's what he's a rapper, talented rapper, said on this, man, we're treated every place in the globe better than we are here in America. I nearly fell out. That is such a ridiculous statement.
That's his perspective.
That's his BS that needed some Twitter off because it's just not true.
But I have to take it in context because he's rocked stages on a world basis before.
When he goes out of the country and does a concert, it's 75, 80,000.
Do you know?
He does a concert here, it's not 75 or 80,000. That's what he means by that.
That doesn't mean that everything is better, that we're treated better
when
every place on the globe.
When he goes, he feels like he's treated better out the country than here.
I got it. But just remember, everybody in that room was pretty much a millionaire for the most part. All of these people, including Snoop Dogg, have access to get on a plane and go to one of these countries where we're getting treated better at than to deal with what we're dealing with over here. And so, look, any barbershop I've been in, there would be somebody that would throw some common sense at a lot of this ignorance that was just said. To sit there with a group of millionaires and pretend like, oh my God, every place in America, every place in the globe is better than America for us, when they can all pick up and go there, wherever there's better
every
treatment
place is better. They just say they get treated better.
Whitlock, in the modern barbershop, which has now gone, you know, mainstream, Nick Saban of Alabama has a barbershop show.
White people get their haircuts.
Exactly. Would you not say the barbershop and what we saw last night could be the modern barbershop? Not the same one that your dad had 30 years ago?
It is the modern barbershop.
A lot of agreement.
I didn't stop getting my hair cut when I was a kid. Since I've gone this bald route the last couple years, I cut my own hair. I've been going to barbershops for 49 years, not the last two. And all these people that are pretending like these are all private plane people that were on that show. These are all people that have barbers that are their own personal barbers and come to their homes. They ain't been in barbershops like I have been. They're pretending, and that's why the show rang inauthentic. That's why they're sitting around with wine glasses and everybody's cussing and Jon Stewart's driving the conversation and people are just saying ridiculous things because it's not even a real conversation. Because in a real conversation, things happen like what are happening right here. This conversation's far more authentic than anything they did. There's disagreement, there's pushback here, there's people with different perspectives. Last night, there was a bunch of people throwing out little silly PC thoughts intended for Twitter, and they needed a big can of Twitter off so somebody would deal with reality. To sit here and pretend, and I've traveled a few places, to sit here, it's, oh, so much better in all these other countries than here in America. It's a lie intended for Twitter approval to sit here.
But the only person that said that was Snoop because
and
he's
everybody agreed
because he's an entertainer.
And that's the only person.
Not
that had
one
that
athlete said they get treated better out the country.
Snoop ain't going nowhere. Snoop not one ain't left L.A.
But what I'm saying
it's
is
terrible here. But he ain't left L.A.
When he does a show, it's 75,000-80,000. That's what he's saying. They packed the arena for him.
Here, go pack up and live there.
Not one athlete. Odell Beckham didn't say it. LeBron didn't say it. Michael Bennett, Drake. None of them said it's better out the country. That was Snoop's viewpoint from when he performed the show. Me personally, again, I've never been in a barbershop. I thought it was great. I really did. I thought it was a good
and
show.
And I'm giving you a person that's in the barbershop, takes his boys to the barbershop on a regular basis, goes to barbershops in basically every NBA
you
city.
You take your children, and there's that kind of profanity and that.
And what I'm saying, when the kids come in, the level of speech is different. When they leave and when it's just the guys, and you may go after seven for that. When you go, I may just stop in the barbershop just to see just what's going on, what the topics are. That's how we speak to each other. And I don't raise my children to be sensitive to every word. They know what words are wrong. They know what words are right. And when they hear it, it's not like an alarm. Oh, my God, that's a bad word. It may happen, but you just can't say it. And those are the things that go on in our barbershop right now. It is not that far off from the typical barbershop. You may have your choice of drink that you have. If they chose wine, they chose wine. But did you want a stereotypical drink of a 40 or a beer? Or like, what did you want?
There's not a lot of drinking going on at the barbershop.
In your barbershop, though.
In most barbershops. And so I'm going to just tell you what my number one I promise to God, this is what happened. When I watched this show, the number one takeaway I had was like, oh, my God. Kobe Bryant has so much more class, character, so much more self-awareness than LeBron James. Kobe Bryant would never put himself out there
now,
like that. Now, he may go on that show and shock me and go in there and get right in there with him, but I was just blown. I was like, this is LeBron James.
They grew up completely different.
I get it.
They grew up completely different.
Lastly, what I found refreshing was you got a perspective from an athlete from the horse's mouth. You got a full conversation from it.
What was riveting?
Let me finish. However the athlete felt, you got the whole conversation. You didn't allow people to break it up and make it something that's not. You get to see an authentic piece of work from the athlete so that you can go back to it and see exactly how they feel. And I think that's what they were going for.
Football is about to make its long-anticipated return to living rooms all across America. That means bragging rights and huge cash prizes are up for grabs at DraftKings.com, the leader in one-week fantasy sports. With one-week fantasy at DraftKings, you choose when to play. Draft a new team every week with no season-long commitment. At DraftKings, you are the GM. Just choose your players and stay under the salary cap and see how your team stacks up against the competition. No matter what your skill level is, there's a contest waiting for you at DraftKings. So if you've been thinking about trying one-week fantasy football, now is the time to play. Because nothing makes football Sundays more exciting than when you have a DraftKings lineup on the line. To celebrate week one, DraftKings is hosting a free team pick'em promo. Download the app or go to DraftKings.com now and use the code SFYS, all you have to do is pick at least half of the winning teams correctly, and you'll win a share of $1 million. That's code SFYS, only at DraftKings. The game inside the game. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/pick'em for details. All right, welcome back. TJ Houshmandzadeh is back. We're joined now by a couple of Super Bowl champs, James Harrison and Mark Schlereth. Let's move to Odell Beckham Jr., who is one of the featured guests on last night's debut episode of LeBron James' talk show, The Shop. Odell just landed a record-setting new contract with the Giants, but still had some complaints about being one of the most recognizable athletes on the planet.
To me, I be feeling like, I tell people this all the time, I really feel like a zoo animal. Like, that's where life's gone for me. You know, we used to take your kids to the zoo and we used to be like, you know, I wanna see the lions or let's go see the lions. And you go out there and the lions are laid out. You know what I mean? It's like, why aren't they doing lion stuff? You know what I mean? Like, I got people who call, Odell, dance. Like I'm a show monkey or something. Like, I'm a puppet, you know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, to me, that doesn't feel good, but it's like, damn, that's where life became. But can you ever really detach from that?
All right, The Shop is streaming now on HBO Go and HBO Now. Listen, people, when I go to someone's home for dinner, people get very upset if I don't get a second helping because I look like somebody that enjoys eating. I put myself out there like I enjoy eating. So people try to stuff food down my, I'm good. No, you gotta have a second helping, Because that's how I put myself out there. This man is dancing damn on the field, in the locker room, in my feelings, the Drake song. He popularized the dance, blah, blah. He's put himself out there in a way that that's how people respond to.
Sure.
I can't blame people that want to see me eat. I put myself out there like I like to eat. What's he complaining about?
When you, listen, the way it is now, obviously with the social media, you're building a brand. You've built a brand. You've got 11.4 million Instagram followers. You've got the hair. You go out and do a, and God bless him because he's phenomenal. He goes out and does a whole show, pregame show in the end zone, catching it with one hand and doing all these things. I mean, he's putting on a show. He's an entertainer. So I always sit there and say, man, you can't complain when you've done all those things and the white hot spotlight shines down on you and shows some of the skeletons in your closet. Like, that's on you. Like, that, you've earned that. You've earned those stripes. That's part of it. I understand that you don't like it, but guess what? Like, there's different ways to go about it. Like, you could go in, take him and Julio Jones in a mall, put him in a hat and sunglasses. A lot of people would not recognize Julio Jones because he's lived this quiet life. He's been behind the scenes.
He ain't got blonde hair.
Everybody knows. Everybody knows that guy. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Well, I gotta kind of disagree. I think what he's saying is that it's times where he wants to have his own time. You know, he has the social media. He goes on Twitter. He goes on Snapchat. He goes on Instagram. And those are the times that he wants to share and show the fans what they want to see and entertain them and do whatever it is that he does. But it's times where he wants to just be Odell. Not Odell, the football player, the superstar for the Giants. I just want to go have dinner, eat, chill. I don't want 15, 20.
Get off Twitter.
Well, that's part of what he has to do. You don't work 24/7. He don't work 24/7.
He doesn't have to do it.
He likes to do it.
I get it, and this is what comes along with it.
But it's still times where you want to have time to yourself.
Before TJ goes, James,
if I feed you one plate and I give you another plate, right, yeah, and I just continue to try and feed you, at some point you got to stop eating, right?
I would agree.
That's what he's saying. At some point, this has to stop. I want to have a little time to myself.
James, this is the reality. Now, this is a serious but funny statement. Mm-hmm. It's a serious, but there's a little humor into it. The way you carried yourself on the football field and the way you played on the football field, I'm being told, it makes you a little bit intimidating. Even me dealing with you right now, there's only so far I'm gonna go because I've watched you present yourself on the football field and I really don't wanna deal with that James Harrison. So there's only so far I'm gonna go. You did that, not me. You made me react to you that way, so there's only so far I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go.
Okay. Now listen, I'm nowhere near the level that Odell is right now as far as the popularity, but I still get people that come up to me and they want autographs or they want pictures. Like I said, it's not to his level, but it's still points in times where I'm like, phew, I really don't want to do this. You know, I'm with my kids eating. He's like, Dad, someone's coming over. They look like they got a camera in their hand. I'm like, listen, okay, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna take care of this right now. And then you take that one picture or that one autograph, and now all of a sudden it's 10, 15, 20 more people. And you're trying to eat, and the first thing they're gonna say is, I don't mean to bother you.
That's the life you chose.
Well, I chose to play football.
I still get it to this day. I still get it to this day. And for me, I don't mind it at all. I'll tell a quick story, right? So when I get drafted to the Bengals, we go to the Tri-County Mall. And a year before me, Peter Warwick was the fourth pick of the draft. Peter Warwick, the best college player I ever seen. We're in the Tri-County Mall. It's me, Peter Warwick, Chad Johnson, bunch of receivers. Pete, we cannot walk through the mall. Everybody's asking Dub for an autograph, for a picture. Mm-hmm. And me and Chad, like, we play? You know what I mean? Like, they didn't know us. They didn't care about us. And so from that point forward, I put it in my head that if I ever was in that situation, I don't mind taking a picture. I don't mind signing an autograph because that might be their only time seeing me. So I could be out with my family. I might not want to do it, but I'm going to do it because of they might not never see me again. And I remember being in that mall with Dub, and he was like, he didn't turn anybody down. I'm sure it got tiresome, but that's just the world we live in.
I understand that, but to his level, like for me, I'm
Odell
the same
is
way.
The like, only football player that is like, he's the first ever NFL player that I can recall that's like a global superstar
no
because of social media. It's always gonna happen. I'm sure he gets tired of it.
At some point in time,
I'm sure he gets tired of it, but it's impossible.
I tell my kids, they like that. Can you not? I said, listen, at some point in time, they're not going to care who I am. I said, I'm going to take it while it's coming. I said, if I really do get to a point where it's maybe three times, I was like, you know what? I'm here to watch my kids play ball. I said, I'll try and do something for you afterwards, but I'm here to do the same thing you're doing, watch your kids play. That's the only times I really have turned down people. Other than that, you know, it's cool. But for him, like you said, it's a global level. You know, at some point in time, you know, it's like, hey, I just want to go out and have a meal.
You look at it this way. Would do you think, and we all played, would you prefer to be hounded or not recognized at all?
Tell you what, when I first started, honestly, on everything I love, I prefer not to be recognized.
But I'm going to be honest, though.
No, listen,
what he said to you,
I'm going
to
give you an example.
I played against you. What he said to you, everybody in the league think the same way. Like, bruh, don't push James Harrison. Straight up.
There's plenty of people who have decided not to come up and ask you for your autograph or your picture with you.
No, because they're scared. To be honest with you, I'm going to tell you something. Once I started doing the social media thing, I got more people coming up to me. But here's a story. I'm in a restaurant with my mom. This is like 2007. It's right after I just had my first year of starting. I made the Pro Bowl, all that stuff, right? So we're sitting in the restaurant, and I wasn't used to people staring at me, looking at me. And it's a guy, he's sitting over there, he's staring, he's looking at me. And I'm sitting there eating with my mom. I look at my mom. I say, this dude is staring at me. She's like, okay. I'm like, well, you know, I'm like, why is this mother staring at me? Like, do he have a problem? You got a problem
right
with me? She's like, boy, stop, calm down. He don't recognize who you are. I had to realize that people were starting to recognize me, and I had to change the way I dealt with people, because any other time, it's like, why are you staring at me? You got a problem with me?
That's right. You know? We're good,
right?
Right.
We're good.
All right, good. All right, welcome back. James Harrison, TJ Houshmandzadeh, and Mark Slareth are back. Let's move to the NFL. We're reportedly... Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers have finally come to terms on a new deal, agreeing to a four-year, $134 million contract extension that will once again make Rodgers the highest-paid player in the NFL and reportedly includes more than $100 million in guarantees. I'm not that big on this contract because I think Aaron Rodgers needs to be a better supporting cast, and I wouldn't, if I were him, I'd go the Tom Brady route and not be the highest-paid player. I think they need a lot more help for him to be back in Super Bowl contention. So I'm not a big fan of this.
I wouldn't go that route because Tom Brady has his own facility set up inside Foxborough. I mean, he needs to get what he can, what he's valued at. Right now, I don't have a problem with what he did.
Yeah, listen, you got to make as much as you can. Marcellus, that dude's coming here. You give up money?
Did you give up money?
You lie.
I gave her $5.
Okay. Listen, man, you got to make what you can make. I'll tell you what. When Mike McCarthy morphs into Bill Belichick, then I'll give you back some money. Okay? But until that happens, you better do a better job of scouting guys and developing guys and making sure that we have the requisite tool set here from a player standpoint to win. But Aaron Rodgers don't owe them nothing. He is the best in the business, and if he can make the money,
I'm actually upset he didn't get more. He $31 million a year. He should be making $35, $36, $37 a year. And the next guy that comes should always be the highest paid player in the NFL. And in a couple years, that won't be the case, and you'll be talking about, oh, he's underpaid again. It's not his responsibility to make sure he has a great supporting cast. Exactly what Mark said. They have to put guys around him. You look at his receiving core, and none of those guys are in the upper echelon as pairs played at their position. They should have more than enough money to get guys around
them. It costs money to get people to come play in Green Bay. It's Green Bay.
Right, and so that's why in my opinion, he took a pay cut. He took a pay cut relative to what he could command.
Okay, but that's an interesting point. But having said this, given the restraints of the salary cap, and given he's the Green Bay Packer quarterback and legend, he wants to win multiple Super Bowl titles. There's money to be made. Look, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. He's won a Super Bowl. But there's money to be made as the greatest quarterback potentially of all time. He's not going to get there. Tom Brady's got 5 Super Bowls. Aaron Rodgers, to me, with this contract, is setting himself up where he's only going to win 1 Super Bowl.
You go player for player, Green Bay in New England, player for player. It's not that much of a difference. You go player for player, each starter, all 22 starters.
So you think it's all Belichick versus McCarthy?
I actually think McCarthy is a good coach. I really do. But overall, obviously, Bill is the best coach in the NFL.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with him on that. I'm with Mark. It's time for the GMs, head coaches, scouting department. Get it all together and make yourself right on every draft choice you get.
All right, tune in next Tuesday as my new co-host, Marcellus Wiley, makes a special guest appearance on Speak for Yourself. We'll dive into his background and discover what makes him that dude. Wiley will join the show full time on Monday, September 10th, when SFY moves to its new time, 3 p.m. Eastern. Dante Jones is here for last call. Let's move to the NBA, which has decided to remove restrictions on shoe colors, so players will be now allowed to wear any color shoe they want at any time. Oh, this is so exciting. This is so thrilling. The kids all get lollipops. This is awesome. This is why the NBA is so great. Is this a big deal? You excited about different shoe colors, Dante?
I'm excited as a shoe collector because now the consumer gets to see different types of shoes on display and the players can express themselves accordingly within reason, within certain boundaries with their
You're
shoe choice.
You're a shoe collector.
Yes, I have been. Yes. My collection has changed according to how older I've gotten, but I enjoy basketball shoes and different variety of them, yes.
All right. I'm going to leave that alone. The reviews are all in for LeBron's profanity and N-word-laced answer to Donald Trump's apprentice. According to the professional reviewers, LeBron's shop is a Grand Slam home run. The Ringer coos that LeBron has found his voice. The Sporting News proclaimed the shop delivered a candid, captivating conversation. Slate says the shop is an unfiltered glimpse into Black America. Really? An unfiltered look into Black America? Maybe a suburb in Marvel's Wakanda. But even T'Challa, the Black Panther, found the red wine-filled goblets laughable. The shop is more of a glimpse into Jay-Z's backyard barbecue than a reflection of Black American life. And as far as candid, captivating conversation, the discussion wasn't even Twitter deep. At least on Twitter, there is some resistance, some pushback. The shop is a layup line. That's what's so disappointing. LeBron, like a lot of elite athletes, believes that iron sharpens iron on the court. Off the court, like a lot of elite athletes, celebrities, and multimillionaires, LeBron prefers to be worshipped rather than challenged. He doesn't want his ideas or beliefs publicly opposed. He and his elite friends have everything figured out. In their minds, their ideas and point of view can't be sharpened by resistance. Genuflection improves their brand, but it weakens their mind. The debut of the shop was a Twitter-like echo chamber for high-class victimhood. Oh, I'm treated like a zoo animal. People want me to dance. Every other country treats me better than America. They don't criticize Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady the way they do me. Everybody on that damn show is living the American dream. God blessed them with a gift, and they're using it to improve their lives and the lives of the people they love. America is just like life, unfair. Whining won't make America more fair. Explaining to people how to combat unfairness will. But you can't do that when you're wallowing in victimhood and surrounded by people who won't challenge your naive thinking. At one point during the shop, LeBron stated that he was raised on rappers, Biggie, Pac, Jay-Z, and Snoop. Those were LeBron's intellectual scholars, not Martin, Malcolm, Thurgood, or hell, even Jesse Jackson. The shop is the black kiddie pool, and LeBron is the lifeguard. No wonder the show is being celebrated. All right, joining me now, Doug Gottlieb, Fox Sports Radio host, Dante Jones, former NBA champion, LeBron James teammate, and Jason McIntyre of The Big Lead. Guys, this is my problem. We'll start with you, Dante. You got the closest relationship to LeBron. You're my number one critic here on this show. I don't think LeBron and a lot of elite athletes and celebrities, they hate being challenged. That's what they've so pampered off the court. They love to be challenged on the court. Off the court, they want no resistance.
I don't think this was the forum for challenge. I think it disappointed you because you wanted it to be something that it's not and it never was going to be. You wanted a debate show. You wanted to see people argue. You wanted to see LeBron talk to somebody in black culture about black culture. It never stated that in the previews. It was a collection of individuals in his circle or people that he wanted to talk to, giving their perspective about their lives. That's what it was. He gave his perspective about what goes on with his kids,
how he first entered into an all-white school. I thought the perspective about taking pictures was something that was close to my heart and close to other athletes, because when you're spending time with your family, you want time with your family. People don't understand how one picture turns into two, two turns into 10, 10 turns into 100, and then an hour goes by and your family's still sitting by there looking like, oh, we want time with our dad, not the superstar that he is. So I thought it was a show of perspective. I thought it was something different. It wasn't a CNN debate show, which it was never going to be. Barbershops are not all debates. They're not. They're men having conversations, and sometimes they get into an argument, but sometimes they do. And they did get into one argument at the end of the show. Go ahead.
Doug, I'll let you go. You've made a hell of an argument, and they need to change the show to perspective rather than the bar.
It's the shop. That's it. It's the shop. It does not say arguments.
But in a barbershop, there aren't people giving dissertations, right? There's, you say.
Yeah, they are.
There are. People are speaking about their perspective.
When Snoop Dogg says, you know, that black men are more respected outside of the United States than they are there's not anybody in the room that says, didn't we just have a black president? Was there a black president in France? Was there a black president in England? Like, there's literally no one pushing back against things. And it's not true that...
You took that out of context. Okay, I'm sorry.
How did I take it out of context?
Because he was speaking in a fan's perspective, not and as being a citizen of that country. It's different. It was saying for fan love, because and I think he didn't understand the point of they don't get as much exposure to him, so that's why they come out in flocks when he does come to their country. Like it's different when you're belonging to him.
No way,
I don't think we took it differently. Snoop
Dogg and I,
he didn't say I'd rather be in that country. He just said we get more fan love.
I didn't say that he did. Okay. I just said he said that black people get more respect outside the United States than they do in the United States. Like
that is what he said,
which is completely inaccurate.
In some respect, we do. In some respect, okay. not in a full scope of things, but in some respect, we do.
Snoop to a European soccer match where they throw bananas at black athletes. That doesn't happen here in America, and if it does. Trust me, there's ramifications for it.
Look, I love Snoop, okay? But the fact is, like, Snoop has gone from jail to being a rapper to being some sort of mogul. He's beloved. He can get on any TV show anywhere, go to any concert, any show, anywhere in America. He's beloved. This idea he doesn't have respect. Like, I must be living in a completely a parallel universe from the one in which Snoop believes he's operating it. Look, I like part of the show. I like part of the perspectives in talking about watching his son play. There's nothing like... But even when Jon Stewart asked him, and again, like I don't know why Jon Stewart's in that other than to fit a cliche.
I understand why Jon Stewart's there because you need somebody in TV to direct the
TV experience
to direct the conversation.
I want to focus, guys, on LeBron being challenged. This is the trend in media. You know that, right? Tiger Woods notoriously is not like the media. He started a website. I'll talk to my fans through the website. Derek Jeter starts the Players Tribune. We don't need the media. We'll cut the middleman out. Right. We will directly speak to fans. LeBron now has his show. He doesn't have anybody on there challenging him. He's sitting there with friends having a conversation. I know the media may not like to hear this, all these outlets that are praising the show, but this is where we're headed. The athletes are big enough. They don't need the media. They are cutting out the middleman.
But if you pay attention to the brand of Uninterrupted, the company was founded on the foundation of we're going to give the athletes their turn to speak rather than have to go through the media. And that's where the shop comes from, that company, because they want to give the athlete their time to talk. That's it. And that's all the shop is.
Hellacious, you awesome job. Seriously, and I'm not being condescending.
That's how I feel.
Awesome job. But I'm just saying for LeBron James, if he wants to have a platform for athletes and celebrities just to pontificate and gift us their opinions and put them out there like somehow they're more important than everybody else's or some more insightful or whatever, he's going to have to deal with people like me saying, you know, that's stupid. And a lot of things that were said in there were stupid and elite and had no connection to modern middle America, the typical black people's life. And so to me, they need some opposition in there just so they can get some facts involved in their pontificating, because to me it's just a group of elites saying a bunch of stuff they really don't know anything about and pretending like it has anything to do with a barbershop is ridiculous.
I respect that opinion. I respect that perspective of the show, and that's where the show may need to grow too.
And if I know him as a person, and as a person, he's always looking to grow. He's always looking to get better. And that may be where this show goes to, but I think it's a lot of criticism on one episode, on the first episode of the show, how they started. It could grow to that, and I think it may.
Actually, Jason's point was there isn't a lot of criticism. And because the show has been widely, you know, people are just giving him a hug, right? And everyone's saying how great it is. It's not going to change. It's not going to evolve. They're going to keep doing the same thing.
But we don't
know. Survivor's remorse 2.0.
We don't know. And maybe that's what people want to see.
But he's talking about a very small minority that want this change, want the challenge. He's talking to his fans out there. They eat this up. We rarely get to see LeBron speak candidly, drop curse words, the N-word.
And it's an 11 o'clock show, too. It's not like
HBO, 11 o'clock.
It's not ABC. Sorry.
One second. You know, I really had been. When I watched LeBron play basketball, I was like, man, I can't wait to see him drop the N-word. I can't wait to hear him curse. I never get enough cursing and N-word. You know, I only hear it in rap music. I really was waiting for some celebrity athlete to get on TV and curse and carry on like he's a rapper buffoon. I was hoping LeBron would give me.
So just because you curse makes you a buffoon.
But the show was fake.
Just because you use certain words makes you a buffoon. You don't look at what he's actually saying. You don't look at his perspective. You don't look at anything else except the curse word.
Because
and that's very unfair.
It's cluttered by the distractions of the cursing and the profanity.
That's just your opinion. Some people use curse words, some people don't. That doesn't make you less intelligent.
I understand that people do use it, okay? Mm-hmm. But when you want to elevate the conversation, you're taking away from the conversation you're having by using that language. And what you're telling us is, everything I've ever said before is nonsense. This is how I really am. That's what you're telling us. So we're like, all right, LeBron? Because if I'm changing my brand,
let me drop on one other point there. Let me piggyback off you there and to respond to Jason. I've listened to the entire media for the last year and a half, 2 years, tell me that Donald Trump's profanity, crude language, everything is an abomination. And I get he's the president, but we got to have one standard.
That is absolutely not fair to compare Donald Trump's statements to a couple curse words and the N-word. Those are not the same. You cannot, those are not parallel.
It was
not
a crude, profane show.
It wasn't crude, it was a use of words that you may not use, but that doesn't make it right or wrong.
The president on Twitter versus LeBron on HBO?
That's not even fair,
I'm gonna tell you, my point is, LeBron James has put himself out there as one of the highest profile critics of this crude, profane president.
Is he talking about women? If
I was sitting here today talking about, Doug, you need to lose weight, at some point somebody would look at me like, hey, man, why don't you drop a few? And so that's what happens.
But is he demeaning women?
No, he's not.
He may have cursed, but the message is not the same.
Look, he's saying it's hypocritical. One thing that I think all of us do know and respect about LeBron is he's far smarter than his level of education, right? Like, no one would dispute that. Because normally you say, like, a guy at a high school graduated from one parent home, but when you listen to him and you know all the things he does, he's far brighter. He's above using the language that he had to use. Like, you can say that's keeping it real, but that's when keeping it real goes wrong. Look, the easiest way to see that there was no reality in the barbershop is, here he is in a barbershop with a hat on and nobody ever talked to LeBron about his lid and what's going on. Like, he doesn't want anybody talking about in barbershops there are guys pontificating, but there's also somebody in the back questioning your pontification, and there was none of that.
In a barbershop, it's fine. You can't just climb in the ring with LeBron James, okay? This guy's at the apex of the sport. He's the number one guy.
He's got a group of his peers.
Yeah, his peers, and they're not challenging him. You guys seem to want to create this guy to come in there and challenge LeBron.
Whoa. I'm not asking anybody. I'm asking that group of people in there, Draymond, John Stewart, Snoop, anybody in that group. There were things in there to be disagreed with.
Unless they all agreed with it.
That's why it's a bad show, in my opinion. Okay. Because it's a bunch of people agreeing. It's all groupthink that's at a Twitter level of fault. There's no depth to it. LeBron James is sitting there bragging, I was raised off of a bunch of gangster rappers. That's his intellectual scholars. That's where he basically presented himself. That's where my point of view comes from. That's a joke. That's a joke and embarrassing. Two of them guys he's talking about got killed in their 20s. And some of their role models or whatever, they're talented rappers. They haven't cornered the market on intellectual thought, black progress, or anything. All I'm saying is, if iron sharpens iron on the court, it sharpens it off the court as well. And if you want to be an intellectual thought leader, if you want to open a school, you want to be an activist, your thoughts need to be challenged. And LeBron James is resisting that challenge. The media is afraid to give him that challenge because they're all, oh, I'll be called racist, or I want to be a part of groupthink. I don't want people on Twitter to attack me. Everybody benefits. I benefit. That's why I love having you on the show. Keep inviting you back. I want you to challenge me because it takes my thinking to a higher level. LeBron could benefit from that.
Even Candace Parker talked about giving birth to her child, right? She's not the first woman ever to go back to work after having a child. It's a great thing that she's able to do to provide for her family. But just the fact that there was never anybody in that room to say, like, hey, you know, I mean, listen, Gloria worked when LeBron.
But that's not what you missed that whole point of. She has a short lifespan of her career. She gave up a year of that. She may play 10, 12 years. She gave a year of that. So she gave 10% of her career up to have a child, which we never heard. We never hear a woman speak about that.
All right. Great job. All right. Welcome back. Doug Gottlieb and Jason McIntyre back. We're joined now by Super Bowl champion Mark Slareth. Let's move to college football, where the controversy around Urban Meyer and Ohio State is still lingering. Today, a trustee of the university resigned because he thought the school's suspension of Meyer wasn't strong enough punishment. This just a day after former assistant coach Zach Smith fired off a series of angry tweets denying that he abused his wife, calling Ohio State's investigation and punishment of Meyer a joke and accusing the media of hypocrisy. This thing is not going away and is going to linger over Ohio State's entire college football season. It's going to linger over Urban Meyer. I have mixed emotions about whether or not I think it's fair that this thing is going to linger on and drag out. But I just don't see this going away this season.
Oh, what'd you say? That life ain't fair. It's not, right? I mean, you said that in the first segment. You know, there's no way you can insulate yourself from this, right? 3M doesn't make enough insulation to keep you away from this. And the issue that you get into is, regardless where you are and how you try to sequester your players and how you try to basically remove yourself, man, this is going to come up. And I tell you what, on a completely different note, but I was on a Broncos team that went 13-0 to start the season. And it's amazing. Every week, there are more and more people that are on you. Like, what do you guys think? Can you go undefeated? Starts about week 7 and week 8 and then week 9 and then week 10. And then eventually, you know what happened to us in the locker room? One day we got Kadrezzed. Glenn Kadrezz is sitting in the locker room and he broke. And they kept asking him, we're 13-0. Hell yeah, I'm thinking about it. You can't get, yeah, I'm thinking about going undefeated. We went out and lost that weekend. But the bottom line is this, no matter how much you try to remove yourself, guess what? Your mom's calling, your brother's calling, your friends are calling. They're asking about the situation, what's it like, how Urban is going. I mean, you just can't get away from it. And you will be scrutinized. There's always that yeah, but caveat that no matter what you do, it's not going to go away.
I actually think it's not going to play a big part in this season. I mean, while he's gone, you got on one side Greg Schiano, on the other side Kevin Wilson. Two guys have been decorated head coaches, and two guys, by the way, who have seen their share of controversy during previous stops as well. I think it's different when you're a college kid. I think you can be. You don't have to talk to the media. They can keep you away from it. And this idea that players care, I don't think they do. I think they want to play. I think they want to win for each other and to get to the National Football League. I think it ultimately comes to a head after the season where either the president or Urban Meyer, one of the two will go. You watch. But I honestly believe that this controversy that's locked up into a former assistant coach and the potential of domestic battery, and he said and she said what Urban Meyer knew and when he knew and what did he do about it, all of these things are interesting, but the fact is that inside the confines of a locker room, in college at least, I kind of think the players are insulated as opposed to when you're in the National Football League.
I also think it lingers, like you guys, but just in the media. The media is going to write about this. They're going to ask Urban, and he can just dodge it. He can dodge it by winning and say, I'm going to only take football questions. And then the first time he goes out and loses, then maybe he gets challenged by the media. But I'm with Doug here. Like, you know, sports are tribal, especially on college campuses. Right now, it's us against the world at Ohio State. Columbus is all together behind Urban Meyer. We will ride or die with our coach. We don't care about the Zach Smith situation. It's behind us. And frankly, I the schedule shapes up pretty good for Ohio State. I can see this team in the playoff.
I think I was there up until this board of trustee member resigning. To me, that gives this a life. And Doug makes the point that maybe the school president gets his job in jeopardy. Maybe the athletic director does. But there is a chance that the president is strong enough, the AD is strong enough, that they're going to follow Michigan State's blueprint. Because if you remember just 6 months ago, 8 months ago, everyone thought Tom Izzo and Mark D'Antonio were losing their jobs and that Michigan State was engulfed in controversy and no way these guys could survive. And here we are staring at September, and those guys are still in place. And the media has moved on now. They've jumped from Michigan State to Ohio State, and maybe there will be something else that captures the attention in the news cycle that they move on if Ohio State is strong enough just to weather this.
There's just so much there at Michigan State, and it affected students and student athletes. And you know, now you have a former gymnastic coach facing criminal charges. I think it is in fact different. But you're right. Like everybody atop Michigan State outside of the coaches fell, right? Everyone fell, and rightfully, honestly, so, right? You just, and I think some of that was fear of lawsuit, which they're paying out hundreds of millions of dollars because of those lawsuits. I don't think that's the case here, and I do think this one trustee does make it interesting. But there was also kind of the news and information dump of yesterday, which doesn't completely clear Ohio State or Urban Meyer, but does kind of push you into that side to which what the limited parts that he knew, he seemed to handle in at least on text, right? Which is where you're kind of ultimately honest. It felt like he was more honest with us in terms of how he felt about the previous charges and what he knew and how he was kind of covering for Zach Smith while firing him at the same time for a cumulative type
of thing. But, Doug, there's one thing in common with the three people Whitlock said. Tom Izzo, Mark D'Antonio, Urban Meyer. They all generate a lot of money for the university. That's the bottom line. No offense to gymnastics, board of trustees guys. They don't matter as much as the basketball and the football coach.
Jason, that's not why they kept their job, though.
Oh, Izzo and D'Antonio?
Tom Izzo had nothing to do with the doctor.
But, as he said, the media came after him. We want him out of here. We want blood. We want heads. The media came after Urban Meyer. They're not going to win that battle.
Well, they're not going to win the battle with Urban Meyer. I mean, they're not going to force him out. But if there's enough publicity and it affects him enough and you have to hear it enough and it affects the kids enough, does he have a situation at the end of the year where he's like, you know what? I mean, he's walked away before. I don't need it. Like, that's the thing that resonates with me.
Just remember, like, you've talked about Jim Harbaugh. There's some pressure to win there. There's the Michigan State still thing hovering. Everybody deals with distractions. And I do think you pointed out, it's a smart point, college towns, it does become us against the world. You can use this at least for the season.
All right, to New Orleans, where the Saints just traded a third-round pick to the Jets for Teddy Bridgewater. Bridgewater's NFL future has been murky since his brutal knee injury back in 2016, but NFL Network now says he could be Drew Brees' heir apparent in New Orleans. My position, this guy hasn't played since 2015, and you just gave up a third-round pick for him? He's had a devastating knee injury. He hasn't played since. Would anybody give up a third-round pick for Colin Kaepernick? He hasn't played either since 2016. That I like the play here of taking a flyer on Teddy Bridgewater as a potential long-term solution in New Orleans. I just think a third-round pick's too high of a pick.
Well, I think there's a dearth of quarterbacks in this league. Teddy Bridgewater came out in training camp. He played exceptionally well. He stayed healthy. He went to every practice. Talking to the Jets coaches, he was exceptional, and he was exceptionally healthy. During the course of training camp. Bottom line is this is a Nick Foles effect. But you lose, you've got a New Orleans team that is one play away from being an NFC championship, and they understand with young quarterbacks behind Drew Brees, if we lose Drew Brees, we're done.
Right.
If we lose him for 4 to 6 weeks, we are done. We don't have a quarterback that can take a team that actually has NFL and Super Bowl aspirations. We have got to go get ourselves somebody who can
Blind squirrel. You found a nut. Go ahead. Oh, very good point.
I think the other thing is the third round pick for a player you're using this year.
Like, you get the use of him the entire season without it costing you anything. It doesn't cost you a third rounder till next year. So you get this insurance, which it is. It's great insurance for a whole year with no cost to you. I mean, none, zero. Yeah. So yeah, that's outstanding to have. And I agree 100% with the Foles thing. I mean, you know, smart teams do smart things. This is a smart move by New Orleans.
Yeah, I agree with these guys wholeheartedly. And, you know, they could end up making them look bad when Breeze is done. You know, he may come in there and be that perennial starting quarterback and start being a pro bowler and so on and so forth. So they may look bad by just only getting a third.
Listen, you guys are both, Mark, you've made the point, he's looked good in training camp and preseason. As a coaching staff and as an organization, can someone show that kind of value in preseason where the defenses are that vanilla, the play is that inconsistent?
I think you go back to 2015 and you see the way he played, and he played well. And then you take this preseason, not so much about the way he played, and he did play well. Coaches are rave about how he played. But they rave about the work ethic and how healthy he actually is. Like, he's overcome this. I mean, it's an incredible injury that he had. He almost lost his leg. And he's back healthy. He's not spending time in the training room. He's at every practice. So this was a prove it on your health year, not on whether you can play or not. He can play, and I think he's shown that he's taken that team. He took Minnesota to the playoffs in 2015.
You think Teddy Bridgewater is happy knowing he's going to sit this year and probably next year behind Drew Brees?
I think so. I think he's going to a great organization. I think, look, it'd be hard for him to think, hey, I'm going to come in and start anywhere right now, coming off that injury, having to prove himself. I think he would have needed a year anyway to be in that situation. So I think it's a great situation for Bridgewater. I think it's a steal for New Orleans. They get a great professional. I mean, that's what Teddy Bridgewater is. He's a great professional. Great kid. He's got tons of talent. He's got time to learn the system, get in there and develop. And look, Brees will play for another 5 years probably because that's just who he is. But that doesn't mean this guy's value doesn't skyrocket by not even playing a down next
year. Yeah, I want to correct myself. He signed a 1-year deal. He'll be a free agent after next year. Your Nick Foles point is excellent. The Saints are a win now team. Now they got two quarterbacks they feel like they can win with. All right, welcome back. Time for Last Call. Mark Schlereth is here. Let's move to the Rams, who will finish off the preseason tonight without their starting quarterback and running back ever taking the field after Sean McVay decided to sit Jared Goff and Todd Gurley the entire preseason. Mark, is this going to backfire?
Sure, it'll backfire. I still think they're going to be a good team, but offense, especially offensive football, man, it's about rhythm. How do you develop rhythm when you don't actually play? And here's the thing about the way the league is constructed right now. First 3 weeks, 4 weeks are really extended preseason. You're not ready to play, that's where you can make hay, man. You can start off 4-0 if you're ready to play. They're just not going to be ready to play.
Most overconfident team in football, the Los Angeles Rams. All right, to college football, where my Ball State Cardinals kick off their season tonight against Central Connecticut State, a very tough non-conference opponent. As Ball State sets its sight on a MAC and national championship, Mark, what are you giggling about?
A national championship?
Yeah. You don't remember in 2008 when we were ranked 14th, we were undefeated and just a hair away from winning the national championship?
Had you had the grades, you'd have probably gone to Idaho.
Yeah,
but you couldn't get in, could you?
You don't remember the 2008 Nate Davis, Darius Hill, Dante Love, great all-time great team?
Nope.
Same thing going on right now with Riley Neal at quarterback, James Gilbert at running back.
All I know is came a tribe from the North Braven Bulls.
Josh Miller at cornerback, Jake White, middle linebacker.
Gold.
Ball State, baby, national title sleeper.
All their foes.
Heisman Trophy for Riley
Vandals.
White.
Come on, you Vandals.